Okay, this week we're carrying on in the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 3, verses 4 to 6. The title of the sermon today is Nebuchadnezzar, Leading Without Authority. That's just a nasty place to be in. But often pride and ego will leave us just in such a place. Daniel chapter 3, verses 4 to 6. Then a herald cried out. This is after he'd set up his golden altar. Then a herald cried out to you. To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Interesting. So Nebuchadnezzar had a dumb idol fashioned. God does not approve of dumb idols. They're just these superstitious craftings of man, which offer no hope for his future. They fail man at the point of his greatest need, and that's redemption. The first of the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20, verse 3, says, "You shall have no other gods before me." This means not just instead of God, but even in his presence. Don't worship here and go read your horoscope. Don't do stuff like that. That's in his presence. That's bringing dirt into his home, into his temple, into our lives. And then Nebuchadnezzar makes a promise that he can't keep. He will throw people into a fiery furnace who do not bow down to his dumb idol. Talk about regulated church attendance. If you don't come to church, we're going to throw you in a furnace. That's pretty scary, but that's the kind of guy he was. Oh no, I missed out a spot. Sorry, let me go back. Nebuchadnezzar gathered people together to fall down and worship at his dumb idol that he'd made. Something also that God does not approve of, found in Exodus 20, verse 4, the first part of that verse. You shall not make for yourself a carved image. And verse 5, the first part of that verse, you shall not bow down to them nor serve them. So then he made this promise that he can't keep. Throw people into a furnace. He would indeed throw people into this furnace, but his intention of destroying them would not happen. That's what it means. Not that he wouldn't throw them in the furnace, but that the furnace would mean nothing to them. How can you throw somebody into a furnace and it means nothing? Only God does that kind of stuff. And he's the one that is looking to be made known here in this book, because he's the one that everybody needs to see. I just love how God always beats man at his own game. God will give man the first play on the board, but he will always make the last one. He'll always make the last one. I find Nebuchadnezzar's choice of fire most interesting. Fire, as we know, is a symbol of divine destruction or divine purification, or in this case, both. Both. He's playing God here. And that makes him another foreshadowing of the Antichrist. So this divine fire is actually going to backfire on Nebuchadnezzar, and it's going to destroy his religious ideas. Perfect! Do you ever stop to think about that? That God would destroy the silly religious ideas that we have? About him, about others, about church, about the world? Absolutely! We need the truth. We need to have that kind of stuff happen. So this totally backfired on Nebuchadnezzar, but it was perfect in God's eyes. And divine purification. You think those three Hebrew boys had faith when they went in the fire? They had a lot more when they came out. They were so blessed by that miracle. At that point, though they had faith, they didn't need it. They saw God's hand. You want to see God at work? It'll be on his terms. And it'll be his will. And if we let him do it, it's mind-blowing. It can be mind-blowing. So because Nebuchadnezzar didn't have God's approval in what he had done, set all this up and decided this would happen and that would happen, he didn't have God's authority. Because he didn't have God's approval, he didn't have God's authority. Ever wonder why it seems like you don't have God's authority in your life? That might be the reason right there. Maybe you're working an agenda. Maybe you're in this thing for yourself and God's supposed to work for you. And you don't like that when he doesn't, what you thought he should do. So he didn't have God's authority. He didn't have God's power to pull it off. He was indeed the head of gold that he saw in his dream and was king among kings, to be sure. But what he missed was that he was only God's servant in it all and never even knew it. God brought Israel, Jerusalem, to Babylon for the point of discipline, not wrath, not punishment, discipline. Don't behave like that or this will happen. We don't have much of that in the world. I mentioned that last week. We don't have much of that in the world anymore. Don't do this or this will happen. Gravity. You got to love gravity. It'll always bring you back to the ground. God's laws are just that solid, whether you believe it or not. It doesn't matter. It happens in people's lives whether they believe it or not. Nebuchadnezzar never believed it. Didn't stop it from happening. Didn't even stop God from making him his servant. What stopped Nebuchadnezzar from seeing what was going on was his own arrogance. He was so full of himself, there was no room for God at this point. But God's making room. He's doing Nebuchadnezzar a great favor. He's making room for himself in Nebuchadnezzar's life. So he hadn't figured this out yet, but God was going to help him. So God allows Nebuchadnezzar to make his moves. Sort of like a chess game, you know, where you have a novice player has memorized a sequence of moves which brings him to a place of saying check. You know, you can do that. I've never done it, but I have a grandchildren that beat me because they did that. To which, anyway, the person says, novice says check. To which the experienced player says checkmate without even making a move. Without making a move. We are so foolish that we can go ahead in our agenda and get to the place we want and don't realize that we left home base wide open. That's God. That's God. That's who he is in our lives. Daniel 3, 7 to 12. So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre, in symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had made. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, in particular. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. Wow. So Daniel and his friends were appointed as overseers in the province of Babylon. Very unusual for prisoners of war to be appointed such a high ranking position. We see in verse 8 that they were being watched to see if they would comply to the king's demand. The compliance of the Jews during this nationwide ruling of non-voluntary idol worship was of major political importance to the government caucus of the day. What's the saying? You can take a boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of a boy. And that's what they figured was going on, and they were watching them. These Jewish boys were different. Though God continued to give them great wisdom, the governmental system of the day under Nebuchadnezzar's rule would only tolerate God's wisdom as far as it served the kingdom of self. Watch out for that one. That we only tolerate God's wisdom when it serves the kingdom of self. Religious self. I like to call that religious flesh. The flesh being everything about me and nothing about God. And we can do that. Rather than the flesh dying out to its own self-centered, hedonistic living, the first thing it will do if you become a believer, the first thing your flesh will offer to become religious. Instead of just going to church once a week, you'll start going to church twice a week. You'll include a Bible study or two and three prayer meetings. And all you're doing is stoking religious flesh because the self hasn't changed one single bit. Still self-centered. Watch out for that. That was the Babylonian attitude toward God at this time. As long as it served them, they're in. It was jealousy on the part of the Chaldean rulers that motivated them to take note and accuse the Jewish segment of the caucus in the first place. It doesn't matter. It's just government. It's just nations. And God outplays them both very well every time. I don't put any stock in any of those things. Governments or nations. Just God. I'll live in them. I'll be an honest citizen. I will respect them. I will pay honor and due where that's due. As far as expecting them to improve my life? No. No. They're not empowered to do that. And the main reason is because they're not under God's authority. And so they can't do that. Anyway, don't want to get off on that rabbit trail. Now, yes. I have a question coming up. It's probably in your mind. Just hang on for a minute. We'll get there in a few moments. So where people submit to Christ, the will of God prevails and His authority abounds. This should be the atmosphere and experience of every body of believers. When it isn't the choice of a majority of a body of believers, then politically posturing prevails. When Christ isn't the center, political posturing prevails every time. And people, instead of Christ, prevail and become preeminent. And whenever you have two people in a room, you have a disagreement. Two people and one subject in any given room, you've got a disagreement. Why? Because it's self-oriented, self-centered, politically motivated. Christ needs to be the center. He needs to be preeminent. Otherwise, our experience is still our religious self and not Him. So here in Daniel, God allowed the preeminence of idol-worshipping Chaldeans to prevail. He just stood there and let it happen. No problem. He's waiting for the person to get through making the moves so He can make checkmate. You can't outrun them. You can't outdo them. And if you insist till the end, you'll perish. Because He always has the last move. God is setting up a showdown which will expose the folly and powerlessness of political prowess without God. A question we need to answer from this chapter right now before we go any further, maybe it's been stirring in your mind. Where was Daniel in all of this? There was only three boys thrown into the furnace. The fourth one was Christ seen in the furnace. So where was Daniel? Why wasn't he mentioned? Well, obviously it's not important to the story, or he would have been. It's not important to the story where he would have been. The Bible is about glorifying God, not about all the details of people and glorifying people. So, leave you with that. But, let me give you this. This is what I satisfy myself with. However, the last place we see Daniel, and you can look it up in your Bible, is mentioned in Daniel chapter 2, verse 49. And what it says is, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. He was closer to Nebuchadnezzar. He was there in the court. He was there for Nebuchadnezzar's trustworthy servant. He could send him anywhere in the province of Babylon to do what needed to be done. He was probably off on some king's business. And just wasn't there. That's terrible. It's not terrible. It means he wasn't there. The miracle still goes on. It's not about who's involved in the miracle. The miracle still goes on. It's quite likely that the king had other business in other places. Daniel was sent there to look after it. That's just an assumption. But it wasn't important for Daniel to be in the story. Daniel 3, verses 13 to 27. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the time, you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery in symphony with all kinds of music, that you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God will deliver you from my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered the king and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded a certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent, and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, Did not we cast three bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said to the king, True, O king. Look, he answered, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God. Ah, suddenly he has faith. Servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the burning fiery furnace. Came from the midst of the fire. And the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together. And they saw that these men, on whose body the fire had no power, the hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. True story. It's really important for Nebuchadnezzar to have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego bow down and worship his golden idol without question. He didn't give them the second chance in verses 14 to 15 to save their lives. He didn't care that much about other people's lives. He gave it to them to save his reputation and protect his position. Nebuchadnezzar had been playing God for some time now, and to have someone question or refuse his will would have jeopardized his hope for complete sovereignty in his one world government and one world religion, which he was setting up. Again, he is a foreshadowing of the Antichrist. He's bully and he's mean. He's self-centered and he's political above all else. Only God is sovereign, yes. But every person before giving their life to Christ thinks that they are as well. Weren't you? I was. Oh no, I was never like that. Really? Then how come I hear so often, nobody's going to tell me what to do? I'm just kind of a rebel. Where is that coming from? That's a love for sovereignty. That's not just a control freak. That's a love for sovereignty. And that person is at war with God when that attitude lives in their life. And there are even some giving leadership in churches who struggle with this as well. And in 3 John chapter 9, John says, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. It's not clear if it was a doctrinal issue or a pride issue. Either way, Diotrephes needed to have the preeminence, which always and only belongs to Christ. When Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego responded to Nebuchadnezzar, the last part of verse 16, they said, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. They were not being rude or disrespectful. They were not being, nobody's going to tell us what to do. They were simply no question about what they could and could not do. And the reason for this is because they were consecrated to God. I'll leave a verse that's in your little paper. You can read it. 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20 speaks about consecration. Set aside for one purpose. bought with a price. It's been said that salvation is free. Free to us, but a very expensive gift. One that a person does not take for granted. If you realize a gift, you will not take it for granted. So I leave you with that last slide. Grace, God's redemption at Christ's expense. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're just hanging out. They're just trying to live. And God swept them up in His glory and used them in a beautiful way to bring this undeserving, unbelieving, unkind, unholy man to faith. Wow. You shouldn't expect people in the world to be any different than what they are. Without Christ, it's not pretty. It's a self-centered world. And what kind of love does God have? He gives it all for the sake of the unworthy, the undeserving, the unholy. We need to be like that. As a church, we need to be like that. That is the church. And then God will do what God will do. And our place will abound. Our place of worship, our lives will abound in miracles. Because God is busy showing Himself.